The Spectator is searching for the UK's brightest entrepreneurs to enter the Spectator Economic Innovator of the Year Awards in partnership with Charles Stanley Wealth Managers. If you have a business that disrupts an existing market, a smart new way of doing things, or something that has incredible social impact, then apply by 1st of July at spectator.co.uk/innovator.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. Last night it was revealed that the former Commons Speaker John Bercow had nailed his colours to the mast and joined the Labour Party, having previously sat as a Conservative MP for 12 years. Interviewed by The Observer, he castigated his former party as reactionary, populist, nationalistic and sometimes even xenophobic. This morning he elaborated on his change of allegiance with Trevor Phillips.
As I said yesterday to an Observer journalist, my values are left of centre. I do not identify with the Conservative Party, and I think that in British politics, most people still see it as principally a choice between the Conservative Party and the Labour Party. And the Labour Party is the alternative government to the Conservative Party. If you believe, as I do, that this government is bad news, unfit to govern, and that the Prime Minister, though a successful campaigner, is a lousy governor, you have to ask yourself, do you want rid of it? And if you want rid of it, you have then to pose to yourself the question and to answer it, how is that to be achieved? And the reality of the matter is that in the United Kingdom, the only credible vehicle for the removal of this government is the election of a Labour government committed to equality, social justice, internationalism and a fairer and more inclusive society. That's the Labour brand.
I know you're a person who chooses your words very carefully, John. You used the expression, this government, I think three or four times this morning. At what point did you decide you couldn't be a Conservative? Was it when the Conservative Party was taken over by Boris Johnson? Or was it something that changed in you?
No, it was something that changed in me. And I think owe it to myself and to you and to everybody else to be on the record about it and for there to be no uncertainty. So if you're saying to me, is it principally about Boris Johnson? The honest answer to that is no. And in fact, there has been, I think, already some confusion and misrepresentation of that point. It's not personal against Boris Johnson. I do think that he is someone who has only a nodding acquaintance with the truth in a leap year. And I think that the utter contempt with which he has treated Parliament is lamentable, and I think it has exacerbated the very strong feelings of resentment towards him. But no, I have over a long period evolved my political thinking.
Bercow also denied that he had been tempted by any promises given by the Labour leadership.
You know what they're saying, aren't they? Boris Johnson didn't give you a peerage, and Keir Starmer will.
No. Clear that up. Well, I can answer that very simply. I've had absolutely no discussion whatsoever, either with Keir Starmer or any other member of the Labour leadership about that matter. There has been no barter, no trade, no deal whatsoever. And if I may very politely say so, and I do, the people who make what they think is that potent and coruscating criticism of me are operating according to their own rather low standards. Let's deal with the issue rather than impugn people's motives. It's got nothing to do with that whatsoever.
Right. Phillips raised Bercow's defection with the Justice Secretary, Robert Buckland.
Just how sad are you to see John Bercow leaving your party?
Well, I think to be fair to John Bercow, I think he left the Conservative Party a long time ago. I mean, he's a private citizen. He's entitled to make decisions about his politics, and I respect that. What I would say is that I think as a former speaker, he's somebody who, even though he's left office, does carry a degree of authority like his predecessors. And I think that his predecessors' authority was enhanced by their refusal to go back into party politics. It certainly didn't stop them speaking out. I mean, Baroness Boothroyd is very forthright in the House of Lords, for example, and speaks out on things that she believes passionately in. It certainly doesn't stop them doing that, and I wouldn't want to see that. But I think him joining a political party actually has the effect of diminishing the force of his voice in politics, however strong he wants it to be.
Phillips also confronted Buckland with a claim made in The Telegraph that the Health Secretary Matt Hancock had not shown the Prime Minister all the data he needed before the COVID restrictions were extended for another month.
The Telegraph this morning claims that Matt Hancock withheld information from the Prime Minister, the Chancellor and from Michael Gove about just how successful the vaccination programme had been, and that suggests that had the Prime Minister known about that data, then perhaps lockdown would have been lifted earlier. Is there any truth in that?
Sadly, I'm afraid that that report is wrong. The data was provided to the Prime Minister and other members of that Cabinet Committee in the most up-to-date way before the decision was made on Monday. And those taking part in the meeting had all the relevant data in the most up-to-date way before the decision was made. There's no question of the Prime Minister not being cited on important data. It was provided to him and other members of that committee in the normal way, as people would expect.
Nick Robinson, filling in for Andrew Marr, quizzed Buckland over the lack of successful prosecutions for rape cases across England and Wales.
You did say you were listening this week, as I said in the introduction, to the concerns of people about the desperately low level of convictions in rape cases. And you did something very unusual. You summoned the cameras. You said you were sorry. You said you were going to do something about it. Your Labour opponent, David Lammy, says you should go further. It's not, the words aren't good enough. Unless you can reverse the figures within a year, he says you should do the honourable thing and resign.
Well, look, the policy is not just about an apology, it's about action. And indeed, in the action plan, we set out a clear aim to get conviction rates back up, and indeed the volume of prosecutions back up to the levels they were 5 years ago by the end of the Parliament. Now, I don't just do that alone, Nick, and here's why such low politics has no place in an argument and in a debate as serious as rape. First of all, it is constitutionally illiterate to suggest that a politician like me should in any way command control the way in which independent prosecutors and the police go about their work. That would be wrong.
Robinson also interviewed the Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, who had a bone to pick with Nicola Sturgeon over the Scottish Government's latest anti-COVID measures.
I was really disappointed on Friday that the First Minister of Scotland just announced out of the blue, as far as we were concerned, a travel ban, saying that people couldn't travel from Scotland to Manchester and Salford and people couldn't go the other way. You know, that is exactly what the SNP always accused the Westminster government of doing, you know, just kind of riding roughshod over people. The SNP are treating the north of England with the same contempt in just kind of bringing that in without any consultation with us.
Can I gently suggest to you that disappointed doesn't quite capture your mood when you heard that? You were furious, weren't you? How did you feel when you saw Scottish football fans dancing and partying in the streets of London when they're banned from the streets of Manchester?
Well, I just think it's double standards. It's as simple as that. It's hypocrisy because, you know, they've done to us exactly what they always complain that the UK government does to Scotland. So I'll be writing to the First Minister today. I'll be asking for compensation for the individuals who might lose holidays and the businesses who might lose bookings. You know, why should a couple from Salford who are double jabbed, who are about to go on a walking holiday in Scotland, not be able to go? It's completely disproportionate in my view. We could have come up with a different arrangement if the First Minister had been in touch with us. But the second thing I'll say to her is, you know, we need an arrangement here. The Scottish Government can't just impose things on parts of the north of England with no discussion with us. That is simply wrong. And they need to live by the same standards that they've always called for from others.
One of the key political stories of the week has been the Conservative Party's shock defeat to the Liberal Democrats in the Chesham and Amersham by-election. The Lib Dem leader, Sir Ed Davey, told Phillips that he felt this result was only the beginning.
Presumably you must accept that there are local factors, HS2, the planning issue, that really contributed to this size of swing.
Well, there are always some local factors, but actually on the doorsteps, and I went to Chesham and Amersham 16 times, I talked to hundreds of people, and the feeling I got from them was they'd been taken for granted by the Conservatives. Many people on the doorstep said I was the first politician to knock on their doors and they'd lived there for 20, 30 years. So people, not just in Chesham and Amersham, but across the blue wall seats, I think have been taken for granted, and they saw Liberal Democrats listening to them, responding to them. And one of the things I heard was they felt that Boris Johnson wasn't in tune with traditional Conservative values, and they were worried about a whole range of national issues as well. So, you know, I'm confident that we are seeing a change in British politics, much bigger than people had been seeing. I think that both the pandemic and the polls have not picked this up. There can be big shifts in British politics. We saw it in Scotland when the Labour monopoly went. We've seen it in the north of England with the Conservatives on the march. I think the blue wall in the south can be taken by the Liberal Democrats in large numbers of constituencies.
And finally, Labour's Shadow Housing Secretary Steve Reid gave his verdict on the reasons for Labour's worst ever performance at the same election.
Well, let's give voters some credit here, Trevor, because what I think happened is that voters took their own decisions about the best way to defeat the Conservative candidate in that by-election. So Labour voters lent their support to the Liberal Democrat who was best positioned. That's never been a seat where Labour's been competitive. It's never been a seat where Labour's done particularly well. And, you know, voters took their own decisions and they defeated Boris Johnson. And they defeated him for very good reasons as well.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to my daily evening blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening, and do join me again next week.